the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Check out my new Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and let me know what authors you want on my program, because if you are lucky and one of the authors that you select is a guest on my program, you can join me right here at Joy on Paper and join in the conversation with your favorite author. So check out the Facebook page, and while you're there, like me, because I like you. And I'm in a good mood today. I have people in the studio. I love people in the studio. And first, I have Johnny Clark, one of my very, 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 very favorite authors. I love his books. I love military books. Anybody who knows me knows that I think half of my collection at home are military books. Going back, I love military books all the way from back in Roman times and Carthaginia and all the way up. Every war I have a collection of books for. And so, but I'm particularly happy to welcome Johnny Clark to the program. Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Patsy. It's good to be here.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about your wonderful books. And then I also have in the studio a new author, and I love new authors, and her name is Lynn Silvernail, which is a nice name and easy to remember. And she has brought in with her her illustrator. She's written her first children's book, and it's really exciting and very interesting book, and we're going to be talking to her. And her name is Lynn. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, great. Well, we're going to talk also to your illustrator that you brought in today, Cam Loram, right? I pronounced it right? Okay. Well, we'll get to you guys in a little while. But first, I want to talk to Johnny. Johnny, whoa, you've got so many things happening.
Yeah, I've got a lot going on right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, everybody should know that Johnny is a real American hero. He won the Silver Star. He's a fantastic author. His book, Guns Up, is a best-selling book. And I just finished not too long ago a very funny book, Section 8.
I'm glad you're laughing.
Well, anybody who reads Section 8, we're going to talk about, I know your newest book, but let's talk a little bit about Section 8, because I did not know this about, now, you know, we're all involved in so much political stuff today, and we think, you know, today's politicians are like the stupidest. But you can go back in history, and you can find just as stupid as all get out. And you certainly found a really stupid, stupid incident in American history that most people don't know about. Tell us about this wonderful book called Section 8.
Well, thanks. It's Section 8. It has nothing to do with housing, so let's get that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's a discharge for Marines that have combat fatigue.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, unfit for duty. Usually it's combat fatigue. And President Truman, Harry Truman, hated the Marine Corps. And a lot of people didn't know that, but he was real jealous of the United States Marine Corps at the end of World War I because he was an old doughboy. And the Marines got a lot of PR when they took the Belleau Wood, and they saved Paris. No one had been able to take Belleau Wood in 4 years of combat, and the Marines took it in 24 hours of hand-to-hand combat. Of course, it was brutal and ugly and horrible, but the French government gave them the French Fourragère, which the 5th Marine Regiment, my regiment, it's the only non-Marine Corps issue thing that any Marine's allowed to wear. So Harry was very jealous of the Corps. He despised the Marine Corps. So once he had the atomic bomb, he decided the Marine Corps could be erased.
Ugh.
So he did everything he could to disband the United States Marine Corps, and he had them down to really just one division left. And Marines were literally starving in camps around the country. There was no food in the chow halls. He was getting rid of the U.S. Marine Corps. And a lot of people had no clue about this. I had an editor who had no clue about this, and he thought that I needed to change the main theme of the whole book because it was an insult to Harry Truman.
Huh.
Now, I don't know if that was his great uncle or what, but he just didn't know anything about history. And, you know, just because they're an editor doesn't mean they're smart. So I ended up leaving Random House because I really couldn't stand dealing with stupid editors. This guy was a dope. I mean, he literally wanted me to change the book because he didn't know anything about history.
Oh, so, I've been dealing with a similar situation with a Vietnam War and Lyndon Johnson, where I've also been working on a project where, in this case, a television project, where the people don't know history.
No, they don't. This guy was young, and I'm sure he was quite smart at everything but history, but unfortunately, he was publishing history.
It's a little problem.
Harry Truman very nearly got rid of the United States Marine Corps, and that's what this comedy's about. These insane Marines and how they sort of saved the Marine Corps.
I love books that make you laugh. Jim Lamb, who's also been a guest on our program many times, he writes as J.S. Lamb, and he wrote a book about Vietnam called Orange Socks and Other Tales, and it just makes you laugh. You know, war is so serious, but and military is so serious, and Marines getting a little bit cuckoo is serious, but boy, when you can put a nice spin on it and make people laugh, I think it's fantastic.
Well,
it's fun.
And Section 8 is, no. It's not really a war book.
No, it's not.
It takes place in China in 1946. And some of the stories in that goofy book are real stories. I mean, they came from real Marines. Old China Hands gave me these stories. The part in the book where Marines actually break 8 German POWs out of a prisoner of war camp, their own prisoner of war camp. And they rent them back to Chiang Kai-shek to run the city of Tianjin. These were German engineers. And when the war ended and the Marines came in to help Chiang Kai-shek because Truman was sent what was left of them to China, well, they went in and this one Marine, his name was Francis Hugh Colleen, was enterprising. He was an Irish gunnery sergeant, and he was nuts. And I love this guy. Well, he said that they realized right away that the city of Tianjin wasn't working well because these German engineers had run the waterworks and the power works. They ran the city. So when they were thrown into a POW camp, the city was having troubles. He figured out right away if they could break these Germans out of prison and rent them to Chiang Kai-shek to run the city, they could make a profit. And so they did. So that's part of the comedy. And truth is funnier than fiction.
Oh, yeah. it is funny. It's a wonderful book. It's called Section 8. I love it. And as I said, I love books that when you finish, you say, that was a good read. And then when you look back at it and you think about it, you're still laughing. So it must have been fun, actually, to do some of this research.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. I that one I really had fun.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with Harlot's Cup, too. It's a different book. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's getting away from combat for me's been kind of good.
Yeah, because, of course, Guns Up was big combat, and your other books were heavy combat.
Yeah.
But so you brought up Harlot's Cup, and I know that this is big on your promotion list right now. How's it going?
Well, it's I entered it in a contest. I had another episode with Random House, musical editors. One editor loved it, asked me to do a rewrite. They were gonna publish it. I did the rewrite, and that editor disappeared. They retired suddenly, and the next editor had no clue that I was working on a book for the last 6 months. So long story short, I'm now trying to get it published another way, and so I entered it in this contest on Amazon, and it's a Kindle Scout contest, and I could use some votes. So if you guys want to read a few pages of the book, see if you like it, and vote for it, You can find it on johnnyclark.com on my website, or you can go to Kindle Scout and find the contest, I'm sure. But this book is historical, and it starts with Queen Semiramis of Babylon, so it goes way, way back. But it actually starts in 1937, and it's a mystery adventure. It's a chase after the Harlot's Cup, and the Harlot's Cup is something that's right out of the Bible. I think it still exists, and I say where I think it is in the book, but it's all biblical. Queen Semiramis was the wife of Nimrod, who built Babylon. She started the Bible says all false religions come from Babylon, and you can trace most of them back to Semiramis. It has a lot to do with the Bible, but it's a mystery adventure and a chase through history.
Well, this book sounds like also that it was, now I've had the privilege of reading it, so I know it's really good. And I could see that there had to be a lot of research involved in this book.
I started this book in 1984. So every time I tried to get it published, or I thought I was done with it, Random House asked me to write another book about the Marine Corps. And so it kept getting put on hold, and then, you know, two or three years working on other stuff and put on hold again. And so I would start wondering if this book was God's will or not. Maybe it just wasn't ever going to happen. And I'm kind of fired up now that it's finally finished, and I hope it's going to get published. But it'd sure help if I could win this contest. But, yeah, there's a ton of research in this thing. It deals with Adolf Hitler and a man named Haushofer, and Hitler's study of the occult. You know, he worshipped the occult. He brought in Tibetan monks to decipher various occult readings and so forth. I mean, Adolf was a real fruitcake. I mean, he was more fruity than most people even know. But my book deals with my heroes kind of during the chase, during the quest to find this cup and to solve this murder mystery. They're led to a castle called the Castle of the Bergs. Well, that's historically accurate, and that's Adolf Hitler would do human sacrifices in the Castle of the Bergs, part of his occult worship. And he killed lots of gypsies and Jews. But at that time, he was killing more gypsies than Jews. Don't ask me why. I guess, race of the week for Hitler,
yeah,
you know. But
exactly. But the research, I could see the research that went into this book, and it's a fascinating book. And again, people can go to Amazon, and it's the Kindle contest, right?
Yes, yeah, or johnnyclark.com, my website.
Johnny Clark, spelt with an I-E. I made a mistake.
Hey, my mom's an old hillbilly, and that's the way you spelled Johnny in West Virginia.
Exactly. So, but it's a good website, and you have all of your military books there. Now, it was funny, you know, seeing all of your work that, you know, it's like that's all you've done in your life. You've just been a writer. You know, it's hard. I know that for many years you were a mailman, right?
Right. I was a mailman when I came back from Nam. That was it wasn't my first job, but that ended up being what I was. And then I've taught martial arts. I started martial arts as part of my rehab from bullet wounds and shrapnel wounds in Okinawa. And then I kept doing that the rest of my life. And I'm now, I'm a grandmaster. It just means you're old. But but I've been doing it. I've been teaching martial arts for about 45 years. And
well, that's one of the things I always tell people. Don't judge a book by its cover, and don't judge a person by what they're doing, because who would think, you know, my mailman is also a great writer, a best-selling author, and that he's written all of these books. So you never know. I've had so many interesting writers on who have, I mean, they're writing really great books, and the writings, many, you know, are now getting to the point where they're best-selling books. But they have their other job, you know, whether they're housing inspectors or line workers. And I just love to tell people that you can do lots of things. This is your life. You have lots of hours in the day. And if you set some time aside, you know, to write, you never know what it's going to lead to. And it is fun. Isn't it fun, that the research part?
I love it.
Isn't it?
I love history. So I really do like that part of it.
Well, you know, I just want to encourage everyone. And, of course, one of the things I love to encourage veterans to write, and I'm hoping to work with more veterans at the VA hospital here, to encourage them to write, because it's a wonderful way, not to necessarily, like you wrote, military books, but to write non-military books. We have Lynn here who wrote a children's book. A lot of vets, you know, you don't have to write something about the war or your whatever was horrific. Perhaps you want to forget that. You might want to try writing a cookbook, because cookbooks are very popular, and or a children's book, just to get in there and tell a story.
Yeah, when I was going to the VA, I was diagnosed with severe combat fatigue when I first came home. And when I first started writing Guns Up, and I'd go to VA counselors and stuff, and they thought it would be cathartic for me to write about it. And they were wrong. No, writing about a nom and then rewriting and writing and rewriting to get the book right, it wasn't cathartic at all. And then because it became a bestseller, I'm talking about Vietnam all the time, you know, and so I'm on radio shows and TV shows and this and that, and you know, they're asking you questions about Nam, so you're constantly reliving it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not always as cathartic as they like to think.
Exactly, that's what the vets that I have spoken to, I say, don't write about that part. Maybe 20 years later, but right now, write a children's book.
Write something fun.
Well, write something fun. Write something, you know, that your children or your grandchildren will laugh about.
Yep.
And that really is a way to stretch yourself and to really help your mind, I think.
Yeah, it really is. But I don't want to, you know, Guns Up has been an incredible blessing in my life,
is.
So I'm not poo-pooing it.
Yeah, no, I know. But you do, of course, that one of the problems is that it's like actors, you get typecast. And you write a book. You write a book about the war. Now, everybody, that's write a book about the war, write a book about the war. And they don't want you to expand. But people have a lot of experiences in their life. And even a great best-selling author like David Baldacci, you know, he writes fantastic thrillers. And when he went along to his agent and he said, you know, I want to write a young adult science fiction, they thought, forget you. You know, what are you talking about? Don't waste your time. And they wanted to push him to write another thriller. And he said, no, you know, I have it in my head. And so he wrote a wonderful, you know, now it's a series of just science fiction for kids. And it's wonderful. And one of the reasons he did it, he said he wanted to make sure that he encouraged children to read, young people to read. And we had that Harry Potter era where all the kids were reading. And that prove to everyone that kids can read a long book. I mean, Harry Potter books are big and fat, but if its story is interesting, they'll read it.
Yep.
And, you know, and so that's a wonderful thing that you can try your hand at all types of books.
Well, for vets too, if you're not writing about your own war, I mean, a lot of my books were about the Marines in World War II and Korea, and you know, that wasn't my war, so it wasn't as personal. I enjoyed writing about that a lot more than my own stuff, because my own was too personal sometimes.
And part of that, also when you're doing something like that, that you do this research and you get to go out and meet interesting people. Isn't that the best part
people.
Of
it? Yes.
You get their stories.
Well, these old China hands, I met them when I was working on No Better Way to Die. They're just a hoot. These guys were, they're all maniacs, but they're... They're my kind of maniacs. They're Marine Corps maniacs, I loved them.
And there's nothing like a Marine.
No.
I love all the military, and I do a lot of work with the F-105 pilots, and I love the Air Force guys, and my father was in the Army, and he also had a Silver Star, but there is nothing like a Marine. I am telling you, there is nothing like a Marine, especially when I was overseas. I remember when I was young, and I was... Well, I wouldn't say wild, but I traveled a lot on my own. And when I would get to an embassy and I'd see that Marine standing there, wow, I was like, I'm okay. You know, that's it. There's just nothing like a Marine. That's how I always feel. So that's why I'm so happy to help you promote your books. I think that, you know, everyone will love them. There's a variety there. As you said, there's some heavy combat, which my husband loves all of those ones. And then, of course, this Section 8, I can't stop laughing when I think about it. And I hope that a lot of people would go over to the Kindle or to your webpage, Johnny Clark, and vote for you because, again, this is another way to get yourself noticed and get yourself, you know, out there. A couple of your books would make such good movies. I just wish somebody picked
it. A couple of them almost were movies.
I know. They
close
come,
but no cigar.
You know, and this is the problem. They, instead of making a new movie with something clever and innovative and something different, they keep making the same movies over and over, and it drives you crazy.
Yeah.
Because anybody, we could make a heck of a movie out of Section 8.
Oh, I know.
I know. I read that book. I thought, oh my gosh, oh my God, I put my script writing hat back on. I wanted, you know, if I won the lottery tomorrow, I would finance that movie because it would be so funny. And compared to, you know, if you go to Redbox and you look at, I want to rent a movie, and they're all so stupid. And then you say, why can't they just, but again, it's partly because now I'm dealing with Hollywood and I'm dealing with television. That they don't know history. They really don't know history. I mean, when I'm talking to a young person, a young producer at one of the major networks, and he says, like, when exactly was Vietnam? It was before. Before what?
Yeah.
And I said, before what? Like, you know, and it's very difficult.
Yeah, I was out there a couple of times. Guns Up was almost a movie.
Guns Up would make
it. No Better Way to Die was, I thought it was going to be a movie. Yeah. Ridley Scott was supposed to do it before he did Gladiator.
I know. They
anyway,
do this to
close
you.
But no cigar.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Yeah, but some of those people, I mean, we shouldn't give them a whole lot of credit just because they're on a screen. Some of them aren't very smart.
That's for sure. Look, I have to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more to Johnny, and then we're going to talk to Lynn and Cam, and we're going to talk a lot. Okay? We'll take a break. Great.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8, it's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life, dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try, but first he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do, a little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all. Even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You hope. Written by a true American hero. You'll love this book. Now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tours, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guests in the studio. We were just talking to Johnny Clark, and he's going to sit aside for a few minutes while we talk now to Lynn Silvernail and Cam Loram. And I'm so excited always when I have a new author, somebody who's come out with their first book. And hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Wow.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay, so this is exciting for you, your first book.
It's extremely exciting.
And you and Cam have put this together, and you've self-published it. Hi, Cam.
Hey, how are you doing, Matthew?
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Now, this is a color, an illustrated book, and Cam did the illustrations very beautifully.
They're Thank you.
Very nice. And you came out with this story. Now, tell us a little bit about, Lynn, you were a teacher?
Yes. I taught for 27 years in Hillsborough County. And when I decided to retire, I didn't really have something to go to. And I had some people say, well, why don't you help us out with doing some subbing? So I said, well, I want to try the elementary, 3 minutes down the road, 5 minutes down the road. So when I was there, I was like, I could write a children's book. So the next month, I said, well, what am I going to write about? And people said, write about something you know. And I said, I went back to my childhood, and I had a tree in my yard. And I used to climb the tree, and I would look out. I lived in a really small town in upstate New York, and I was like, there's something else out there. What's out there? What could I dream about? So that's how the tree started, and then the name Julian just came to me, and then I thought, well, how is he going to go from his tree? And then I came up with Squark, and he's a little cheeky alien caterpillar who comes in and takes Julian on his adventures.
And so the new book, the first book, is called The Adventures of Julian and Squark, subtitle Egypt. So we are going to assume that we're going to go to a lot of countries.
Yes. In fact, the next book is in a progress, and we've decided that they will go to Mexico on their next trip.
Okay. Now, how did you, it was very brave of you to write the story, and then you went out and tried to find an illustrator yourself?
Yes, what happened was after I wrote the book, well, when I started writing the book, actually, I hadn't finished it. I had a really good friend, and she's from Germany, and she started doing some illustration. We were going back and forth and Skyping, and then finally she said, Lynn, we just can't do this. I'm too far away. I have my work, and I got really bummed out, and I just put the book aside, and I said, I'm not going to do this. So I started walking the neighborhood, and I'm like, I've met these two ladies, and they said, why don't you walk with us? And I said, okay. And the next day I said, do you guys happen to know anybody that could help me out with some illustrations for a book? And this lady, Betty, said, my son Cam could do that. So here's his number. And here's Cam. And
wow.
I think he has captured my story perfectly. I am so proud of him and what he's done with this book.
Well, the illustrations are lovely. Cam, whoa. That's a nice way to get a job, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And typically I'm doing handiwork, and art is kind of just a hobby, as well as music. But so to get a call and somebody who needs an illustrator is like, hey,
wow,
why not?
Wow, that's exciting.
Let's do it.
Just out of the blue. And your illustrations are lovely.
Thank you. They're all actual size. I did acrylic on canvas, and my father is really, really gifted with photography, and he helped me photograph it, and we figured out this is the first time, of course, ever doing this, so we kind of had to learn as we go. And
so you had the book finished?
Pretty much. I think there's always the, as Johnny can tell you, the rewriting and the rewriting and the rewriting. And yeah. But it was pretty much, yes, it was finished because I had already had Chris Sand who was going to help. And but I believe, you know, I prayed over this, and I think Cam was meant to be.
Meant to be. I love that.
I have to tell you about this Egypt, because obviously there are a bazillion places they could have gone. And I didn't know, and I thought Egypt. And I have a friend whose family's from Egypt. And I said, oh, I'll do Egypt, but I don't know. So one day when I was subbing, I was thinking about it, and I was looking. I always would go early and look through the books. And I'm looking, and here's the history of Egypt. The next book down, the Egyptians. You know, I'm like, wow. So I go to the lesson plan, and here it was, the masks of Egypt. So I said, I think that's where we're going, is Egypt. It was like in one day, Egypt just came at me.
And so, Cam, when you got the book, you got the words, what did you think at first?
Well, I started basically storyboarding, just making sketches, and to according to her description of the characters and what the alien caterpillar would look like, and just kind of after meeting a few times, we worked out. Yes, Lynn likes this, or she also worked with her previous illustrator, so had a couple ideas of what she was looking for, but I took it to a different media as far as paint.
I'm going to take a quick break for a book buzz. Are you out there?
Reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on Book Buzz. If you are like me as a fan of Sue Grafton, you are wishing there were more letters in the alphabet. Having followed Kinsey Millhone from the beginning with A is for Alibi, you've got to ask yourself, will Kinsey find closure or love? Sue Grafton first introduced Kinsey in the Alphabet series all the way back in 1982, and since then, both writer and heroine have become icons and international bestsellers. Sue Grafton is back with her 25th book in her Alphabet series, Y is for Yesterday, and it's due out on August 22nd. Here's the buzz. This will be the darkest and most disturbing case Kinsey will tackle. A vicious sociopath with a grudge against Kinsey. In this book, you have to ask yourself, will Kinsey discover what Y stands for? Chilling. Y is for Yesterday, expected out on August 22nd. I can't wait. Get it online when it's out on August 22nd. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
Okay, that was Rita. I'm so happy with her little book buzz episodes every week. She is having so much fun reading mysteries for us and reporting on them. And I'm back in the studio with Cam Loram and talking about how he is just stepped right into illustrating a book. It's your first book.
Yes.
Whoa. And have you had art shows before?
No. I studied at USF.
Uh-huh.
For art, and basically just use my skills from that.
Okay, so now this, of course, as I was saying, you guys have done this, you've self-published this through Amazon.
Yes.
Which was
Create Space,
which is a brave thing to do when you have no experience. What did you learn from that experience?
Oh, I learned definitely a lot. One thing is page bleed and what that is, and the image needs to be larger than what they're going to cut out, and that way there's no like light white spaces just randomly, or and how to get things in the correct format. And it was definitely a process. I had to meet with Lynn a few times to, and we realized that, hey, this block of words might be a little bit too long. We might need to add another painting. And as I mentioned, my father, Lara Florum, he's gifted with photography, and he helped photograph my paintings. And we were able to put it on the computer and into InDesign and put everything together. Like as far as we have like, you know, word bubbles and along with the image. And it was just a fun and interesting learning process. And I think we got a handle on it now.
Well, I think you've done a terrific job. I was actually, you are the first people I've had in who have ventured into this, because most people find it very intimidating to do their own, create space for a picture book. Picture books are not as easy to format and to set up as a regular book. And so I think you've done, it's absolutely professional. It looks so good, just like, you know, from a major publisher. So you guys have accomplished a lot.
Thank you.
Wow. Now, as you said, you're going to be going to a lot of different countries. Tell us a little bit about you. You've lived in a lot of different countries.
Well, actually, I've traveled a lot. I actually studied in France long time ago when I was in college, and I taught actually French for many years, and then French and Spanish over the years too. So basically the concept of the book is to bring culture of other countries and peoples to little children, something in a fun way that they can know there's other people out there and not just us here. And that's why we started with Egypt, and then we talk about a pyramid, and now we're going to go to Mexico, and then there's going to be a different kind of pyramid, and there's going to be like a contrast of or comparison contrast to that. You know, it's going to be fun stuff, but it's learning also. And a friend of mine, Donna, thank you, she came over yesterday. She's also a teacher. We started making a lesson plan to go with the book. So any teachers that buy the book, they can use the lesson plan already made for the classes.
Well, it's wonderful. And I think that one of the things that you should do, because I get so upset with children who are not willing to learn about other countries, who are not willing to, you know, expand their horizons. A friend of mine took her children to Europe, and she took them to Paris, and the only thing they would eat was McDonald's. And it was because they didn't have any comprehension. They didn't understand things. And so that's why I love, like, if in a book you mention food. Now, you know, everybody nowadays eats you know, Middle Eastern food. All of this food, like, of Egypt is available here. Mm-hmm. And if parents will, like, get this book, they read about Egypt, and then they take their kids to one of the Egyptian restaurants and say, whoa, here. This is what they would be eating in Egypt. Mm-hmm. So I hope that that's the kind of thing you'll encourage with your, you know, when you're out there doing your publicity. Think about contacting any here in this case an Egyptian restaurant,
right?
And get your books there, because when people come in and say, "Whoa, you have a book here about Egypt," I think that would be a great selling point for you, so that kids will expand their horizons.
I have a friend who bought the book for her grandson, and his only complaint was, I wanted to know more about Egypt. But this book, we had to have Julian and Squark meet, so we had to take some time with that.
It was her first.
So the next book, it will go more into what's going on with Mexico. And then actually, I have a scene in mind already with Squark eating quite a bit.
Well, he's a cute character that you came out with, Kevin. It's really cute. Very the illustration for Squark. I'm sorry. Squark is really nice. I like it.
That's how my niece would say it.
Yeah, well, probably with my cold. my throat. I can hardly pronounce anything. But I just think it's wonderful what you've done here with this little book. I think that you've got a big future here. Right? I think there are 126 countries. Whoa!
I should have. Yes, and probably more as we speak, right?
That's right. You never know. They're all breaking up all over the place. So next thing we know, we'll have 126 book series. This is going to be fun for you.
Yes.
And I think, Cam, you found the, I don't know what your day job is now. What is it?
Handiwork.
I'm
going to install some ceiling fans later.
Okay, he's good. Look at this. This is what I love about books. This is why I love books, because you can be all sorts of, it doesn't matter what your occupation is, you can be there writing or illustrating and just having fun. It makes you into a full person this way. Isn't it fun?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and I have a feeling that you have a nice future ahead of you here. You'll get noticed, and that's the wonderful thing about expanding your horizons.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, look, I'm going to take a commercial break for MyPillow, because MyPillow is a wonderful pillow, and I have been using it a lot lately because I had a little bit of surgery and so I was resting, but I'm back and running again. And but here's a MyPillow ad just for everybody. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY. And Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with a very rough throat here. I'm just about to go, so I'm going to let Lynn and Johnny talk a lot. But I do want to congratulate Chris Kepner. Chris opened his own literary agency not too long ago, and he just got a North American rights for a 3 book deal for a sci-fi series called Stars Now Unclaimed by Devi Pillai. And he got a 6-figure deal for Devi. So that's his first. He broke away from his other agency, started his own agency. And I'm so happy because he's going to be on the program in August. And I'm really happy for him that he got this, 6-figure deal. That's going to pay some rent there in New York City, which is very expensive. And I'm so happy for him. And it'll be fun to listen to his story about how he found this very interesting sci-fi writer. So we can look forward to that in August. And meanwhile, I will get back here to Lynn. You have a website yet? Do you have a website? Not yet.
Yes, yeah, we do. We have a website. We're going to put it on your...
Your Facebook? I see your Facebook.
Yes, the Facebook is, I want to make sure that I have it exactly right. Yes, it's www.facebook.com/Julian.Squark.
Squark.
And okay. You can go there. You could also email me if you want at silvernaillyn@gmail.com.
Okay, and it is it's a very good book, very nicely done. I think all the kids will love it. It's perfect for summer reading, perfect gift to give to all the kids who need to read this summer, and then take them to an Egyptian restaurant and eat some Egyptian food. So I want to thank you, Lynn, for coming in today.
Thank you, Patsy, Cam, so much for having us.
Cam, I think you're fantastic. I think it's just wonderful that you've just jumped into this project and you've done a beautiful job. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'm back with Johnny Clark for a little while. We've got a few minutes, and we're going to talk again to Johnny. Johnny, what are some of the things when somebody comes along and they say, I want to write, what do you think they should start doing?
I started taking creative writing courses at St. Pete College.
Yes, oh, you sneaky thing. Now, Johnny did a very sneaky thing, and I think it's so clever, and this is something that all of you should just think about doing, because it worked.
Oh, it worked. Yeah, I was a mailman, and I was about to I was teaching martial arts at the University of South Florida, and it was going to be an accredited course. So when that happened, I was going to quit the post office because I just wanted to teach martial arts. But my back finally went on me at the post office, and it went on me delivering a big box of books to Haslam's bookstore, which God has a sense of humor. Yeah. So it started in Vietnam. I had to jump out of a chopper. We were coming in on a hot LZ, and the pilot got killed, and the co-pilot took off before all the Marines were off the back of this chopper, and I ended up jumping quite a ways with probably 120, 130 pounds of gear on, a 25-pound machine gun. So I landed like an anchor, and my back was never quite the same. But I had stayed strong with martial arts, and so I avoided surgery. But it finally went when I was delivering books to Haslam's bookstore. So I took I lost both jobs at once. I lost my accredited course at USF, and I lost the post office job. My wife and I sat down, and I said, you know, she said, I think you ought to write a book about Vietnam, you know, because I would talk to her about it. Long story short, she told me to go take some creative writing courses. So I did. Well, they would critique 10 pages a week. So the course was about 15 weeks. Maybe it wasn't that long. I forgot how long it was. But anyway, so I took the course 15 times until they critiqued my entire book. So I just kept taking it over and over again. You know. And the book, that book is a miracle. I mean, I didn't think it would ever actually get published. I wrote Guns Up out of anger, and I was pretty angry at America, and you couldn't turn on the nightly news without getting angry. But God kind of turned that all around. He really did. The book had a real witness because my A gunner, Richard Chan, was a Christian. He had a minor in ministry. So the book had a real witness for Christ. But my anger, was throughout. When I finally got this thing published, it was because I made a decision. My wife and I were going to a Bible study class, and we had these memory verses, and one of the memory verses was out of 2 Samuel, and it was, for those who honor God, God will honor. Well, I knew this book with all the four-letter words in it did not honor God, and I was so convicted. But I've been working on this thing for years, and it had been rejected by every publisher in New York, from New York to California. So I didn't think it would ever get published anyway, and long story short, as I said, you know, I've got to do a rewrite. I got to take all the cuss words out. And my writing instructors at the college thought that wasn't a real smart idea. They said, it's going to sound like Howdy Doody joins the
A military book should be full of dirty words.
Yes, and that's what they thought. And I think most people thought that. Even the editor at Random House thought that. Long story short is I got a call from 9 book publishers suddenly wanted that book within 1 month of this rewrite when I took all the words out of it. And I went with Random House because they were the biggest. I ended up getting an agent. I got an agent after the fact. My agent hasn't done me a whole lot of good. She's never actually sold one of my books. She just does the contract after I sell it. So I'm not sure if I tell other writers agents are all that great an idea, but if you got a good agent who's going to go out there and work for you and sell the thing, that's good.
Yeah.
But I haven't had that luxury.
You've done all the work yourself.
Yes. And right now, you're talking about this guy who just started an agency. He's got to read Harlot's Cup.
Okay.
We got to get him to read Harlot's Cup.
We'll try to do that.
A six-figure deal would be just fine.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? Well, he is amazing young guy, and I had spoken to him over the course of the last 2 years a couple of times, and I really like him. And so when he broke away, because he was with a bigger agency, and he broke away, decided to go on his own, and wow, this first deal is a six-figure deal. So, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it's a very big deal.
Yeah.
I do have an agent that wants to see my newest book, but we'll see.
The thing is, it's persistence. You never know. You know, Clive Cussler has had one of his scripts optioned 28 times. 28. I mean, for one of his books, for a script. They've done it 28 times. Now, he says, at this point, they keep optioning, but they don't make the movie. And it's so frustrating. But... Of course, he's made a lot of money from the 28. So
yeah, I'm not feeling too sorry for Clive.
No, I don't feel sorry for him. But it would be nice if at least they'd option it with real money, because that's nice when you get optioned.
I wrote a play that was an off-Broadway play, and it got done, and it was standing ovations for the week that it was there.
Yeah.
And an old movie star optioned it. Her name was Rita Gam. She optioned it, and then she went to England the next day. That was it.
That's Hollywood and the New York stage. Okay, well, I want to thank all of you for coming in today. It's been it's always so much fun for me to have you in. And again, I have some really fantastic authors coming on in the next few months. Meanwhile, if you want to go to my archive page at radio-joyonpaper.com. You can listen to some of these interviews with famous authors, and also all the interviews with agents are very interesting because they tell you the types of books that they are looking for. And I want to remind all of you, go to Publishers Weekly, because that's really the only place you're going to find active agents. Forget all those ABC, XYZ agent books. It's really... You half of them are already in some other job by the time you get those books. Go to Publishers Weekly, and you'll find all the active agents out there. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen or in an audible book. So take time to start writing. And meanwhile, remember to don't let anyone steal your joy. Just have fun. And I hope that everyone will say something nice to someone today. And I'm going to start by saying something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. I appreciate you. And we'll be back in a few days and with another great program. Bye-bye now.